Have y'all here this evening? We're going to be continuing our series on the book of Exodus that we've been looking at on Sunday nights, and I'm excited about tonight's section of this book. We're going to be looking at several chapters 13 through 15 of the book of Exodus, but these are really significant moments within the Bible, both to the ancient Israelites as they would read and remember these stories, but also, like, you know, so much of, like, really all of our Bible, they're very significant to us today. They still got something to say, and I think these are just really, really powerful. So we're going to look at some of these stories, look at kind of what happens in them, and think some about how those might be significant to us today. Now, to remind you where we are, the 10th plague has just happened. The Egyptians have expelled the people of Israel out of the land because of all these mighty plagues that God has struck against Egypt. And the Israelites have plundered the Egyptians. That's how Exodus puts it. The Egyptians have given the Israelites gold and silver and clothing and all manner of different things and goods as they are leaving. And the Exodus has officially, finally, begun. The people are on their way out of Egypt. And we're going to pick up tonight in chapter 13 of the book of Exodus in verse 17. It says, "When Pharaoh let the people go, God did not lead them by the way of the land of the Philistines, although that was near. For God said, lest the people change their minds when they see war and return to Egypt. But God led the people around by the way of the wilderness toward the Red Sea, and the people of Israel went up out of the land of Egypt equipped for battle." There's something interesting that God wants us to know about this Exodus as we get into the action of it. God did not lead the people of Israel by the land of the Philistines. Now, this would have been the faster and most direct way. They're obviously going to Canaan. They're going to Mount Sinai. And Mount Sinai would have been through that area. That's the road. You know, if you're trying to get to this place, there's really only one route at this point, and it's through the Philistine territory. There was a major highway. It would have led them straight to where they were going, but there's a reason why God doesn't take them along this logical road. He says, lest the people change their minds when they see war and return to Egypt. God knows that if they go through Philistine territory, the Philistines aren't going to just let them pass. And he knows that if Israel gets to this place where they got armed resistance right out of coming out of Egypt, what are they going to do? Their hearts are going to fail, and they're going to turn around, and they're going to say, we should just go back to Egypt. Which, as we'll see in Exodus, is a common problem the Israelites have. Every time there's a problem, let's just go back to Egypt. So this kind of sets up a teaching point that God wants Israel to learn. Instead of taking them down this major highway in the direction of where they're going, he takes them out to the Red Sea. And the best way is God's way. That's what he wants them to get out of this, not theirs. Sometimes God takes us in what appears to be the roundabout way, or a way that doesn't seem logical to us. And this is why we depend on the wisdom of God. God knows what he's doing, even though we may not understand it all. God did not want the people to fall into fear by going into the land of Philistines, by being exposed to this war. And so he is at work in the life of Israel, working all things together for good for them. What it means to be God's people is that we got to learn to start trusting him as things happen in our life. And he's trying to teach Israel that. So it says in verse 19, just the very next verse, Moses took the bones of Joseph with him. For Joseph had made the sons of Israel solemnly swear, saying, God will surely visit you, and you shall carry up my bones with you from here. I think this is really neat. The text wants us to know a little bit of history here in verse 19. Moses takes Joseph's bones with him because Joseph was a man of great faith and vision. He knew that God was going to come and bring them back to the promised land where he said the Israelites were going to be, the land he promised to Abraham. So before he died, he made his descendants promise him, all right, when it's time, I don't know when it's going to be, but I know you're leaving. When it's time that you leave, you take my remains with you. You bury me in my home. You bury me in that promised land. Joseph knew that God was going to come for them, is going to bring them back to the place he promised Joseph's fathers. And even though it might be hundreds of years later, he trusted God's promise. He didn't know when it would be fulfilled, But he knew what God had said, and if God said he was going to do it, he would do it. He believed completely in that promise. And I think that's a lesson for Israel. I wonder if that's the reason he makes them make that promise. Not that, you know, Joseph is in those bones. He's been dead for hundreds of years. But I wonder if that was just kind of a sign to them that he had enough faith that he knew even if it took 100 years, God was going to do this. And if they take his remains with them, maybe that'll be a reminder to them that God has never not kept a promise. We could put some faith in God because this is what they're about to struggle with right here. In verses 20 through 22 of this same chapter, they moved from Succoth and encamped at Etham on the edge of the wilderness. The Lord went before them by day in a pillar of cloud to lead them along the way, and by night in a pillar of fire to give them light, that they might travel by day and by night. The pillar of cloud by day and the pillar of fire by night did not depart from before the people. So we learn that God is leading them. He is leading them as much by the hand as God ever leads anybody. I mean, he's right there. He's got this physical manifestation among them of a cloud a pillar of cloud and a pillar of fire, depending on day or night here. He wants them to be able to see him leading them, whether day or night. He wants the people to see that he's with them. And that being God's people means that God's presence isn't going to abandon you. These pillars of cloud and fire were also pictures of God's protection. How is Egypt going to do anything to you? The Lord is literally right there. You can see a representation of him among you. God spread this cloud for a covering. God is with these people. He's protecting them. He's leading them. They should be excited. They should be confident. They've seen 10 plagues come down. They've seen God himself lead them out of Egypt. And then the problems come in. And we're going to read chapter 14 of Exodus. It's a bit lengthy, but it's a big story, and I think it's worth looking at in its entirety. It says, "Then the Lord said to Moses, 'Tell the people of Israel, turn back and encamp in front of Pihahiroth, between Migdol and the sea, in front of Baal-zephon. You shall encamp facing it by the sea, for Pharaoh will say of the people of Israel, they are wandering in the land, the wilderness has shut them in, and I will harden Pharaoh's heart, and he will pursue them. I will get glory over Pharaoh and all his host, and the Egyptians shall know that I am the Lord.' And they did so." We all got to see these points to appreciate the message of Exodus 14. Chapter 14 opens, the Lord tells Moses to turn back and camp right next to the sea. They're kind of trapped in at this point. The reason is so that Pharaoh will think that the Israelites are lost, because they don't seem to be going in any logical direction. They say they're going to go out to Canaan to sacrifice to God, and instead of going in the direction of Canaan, they've gone to a sea that they cannot cross and camp there. They are lost in the wilderness. So God hardens Pharaoh's heart one more time, and he's going to make it look like they're lost, that they didn't take this major highway out of Egypt, and they went in circles towards the Red Sea, and it causes Pharaoh to come after Israel one more time. And God's got a reason for this. It's very confusing to the Israelites. But he says, "I'm going to get glory over Pharaoh and over all his hosts, and all of Egypt will finally understand. They will know that I am the Lord." And this is exactly what happens in verses 5 through 9. It says, "When the king of Egypt was told that the people had fled, the mind of Pharaoh and his servants was changed toward the people. They said, 'What is this that we have done, that we have let Israel go from serving us?' He made ready his chariot and he took his army with him and took 600 chosen chariots and all the other chariots of Egypt with officers over all of them. And the Lord hardened the heart of Pharaoh, king of Egypt, and he pursued the people of Israel while the people of Israel were going out defiantly. The Egyptians pursued them, all Pharaoh's horses and chariots and his horsemen and his army overtook them encamped by the sea by Pihahiroth in front of Baal-zephon. And when Pharaoh drew near, the people of Israel lifted up their eyes, and behold, the Egyptians were marching after them, and they feared greatly. And the people of Israel cried out to the Lord. They said to Moses," I love this line, it just always sticks with me, the level of doubt and fear and frustration. "They said to Moses, 'Is it because there are no graves in Egypt that you have taken us away to die in the wilderness? Moses, if you were just going to kill us, why'd you bring us out here? At least let us die where we were used to it.' And Moses said to the people, "Fear not, stand firm, and see the salvation of the Lord, which he will work for you today. For the Egyptians whom you see today, you'll never see again. The Lord will fight for you," he says in verse 14. "The Lord will fight for you. You have only to be silent. The Lord's going to handle this. Stop complaining. Don't get his wrath called down upon you too. Just shut up and watch." That's Moses' message to the people. The Lord said to Moses, "Why do you cry to me? Tell the people of Israel to go forward. Lift up your staff, stretch out your hand over the sea, and divide it, that the people of Israel may go through the sea on dry ground. I'll harden the hearts of the Egyptians so that they shall go in after them, and I'll get glory over Pharaoh and all his hosts, his chariots, his horsemen. The Egyptians shall know that I am the Lord when I've gotten glory over Pharaoh and his people." And when the angel of God, who was going before the host of Israel, moved and went behind them, the pillar of cloud moved from before them and stood behind them, coming between the host of Egypt and the host of Israel. And there was a cloud of darkness, and it lit up the night without one coming near the other all night. Then Moses stretched out his hand over the sea. The Lord drove the sea back by the east, strong east wind all night, made the sea dry land, and the waters were divided, and the people of Israel went into the midst of the sea on dry ground, the waters being a wall to them on their right hand and on their left. The Egyptians pursued and went in after them into the midst of the sea, all Pharaoh's horses, chariots, and horsemen. And in the morning watch, the Lord in the pillar of fire and cloud looked down on the Egyptian forces and threw them into a panic, clogging their chariot wheels so that they drove heavily. And the Egyptians said, "Let us flee before Israel, for the Lord fights for them against the Egyptians." And the Lord said to Moses, "Stretch out your hand over the sea so that the water may come back upon the Egyptians, upon their chariots, upon their horsemen." And Moses stretched out his hand over the sea, and the sea returned to its normal course. And when the morning appeared, as the Egyptians fled into it, the Lord threw the Egyptians into the midst of the sea. The waters returned and covered the chariots and the horsemen and all the host of Pharaoh that had followed them into the sea. Not one of them remained. But the people of Israel walked on dry ground through the sea, the waters being a wall to them on their right and on their left. And thus the Lord saved Israel that day from the hand of the Egyptians. And Israel saw the Egyptians dead on the seashore. The Israel saw the great power that the Lord used against the Egyptians, and the people feared the Lord. They believed in the Lord and in his servant Moses. Pharaoh gets his army ready to pursue and chases the people. He overtakes them, and when the people see the Egyptians marching after them, as we saw, they complain. They say, "Why'd you bring us here just to let us die?" And I love that Moses tells them, "Just be silent and wait as the Lord delivers you." They say, "Moses brought them to die. Some kind of rescue this is. What have you done to us?" Notice that Israel said to Moses when he came to deliver them, "Leave us alone that we may serve the Egyptians." That's what they said back when they were in Egypt. They didn't want to be delivered in the first place. They never wanted to come out here. They were content to remain as slaves. But remember what chapter 13 showed us. Trust God's wisdom. God didn't take them the way they thought they should go. God has not been clear about this, but he's had a plan. Trust his wisdom, trust his promises, trust his direction and protection. And the first moment that trouble comes, I think so often, we react just like Israel does here. Panic. The first bad thing that happens, "Moses has obviously brought us out here to die. We followed a madman." I think we do this sometimes. We encounter difficulties in life, and we cry out that God is messing us up, and we want him to leave us alone. We just want God to leave us alone because we think God's wrecking our lives, that he must be the problem. I think that's because sometimes we struggle to trust him. You know, when things don't go the way I expect, when my life is not in the direction that I thought it was supposed to go in, it gets real easy to start doubting God real fast. I think back to the Egyptians, and it's always, to the Israelites, and to me it's always ironic that they doubt, because I'm like, they just seen 10 plagues. I mean, just over and over and over again, they've just seen God prove his power. And yet, when the next thing happens, they forget everything they've seen so far. They panic and they lose faith again. And I would make fun of them, but I've done the same thing in my life. I've seen God deliver me through struggle and struggle and struggle. And yet, when the next one comes up, sometimes I just want to bury my head in the sand and give up. It's easy to lose faith. This is an understandable reaction. It is tough to trust God, to trust his promises, to trust his direction. It's easy to turn your back on him. But notice what God and Moses do. First, Moses tells the people not to fear, to stand firm, to watch for the salvation that the Lord's going to work that day. You'll never see the Egyptians again after this. This is the end of the road for this whole mess. This is it. All you have to do now, we're almost there, is just hush. And this is amazing. God does the fighting. They don't have to do anything. Just watch God fight for us. Just be still and watch God do his work. And notice God's response. He says, not to cry to him, but to move forward. You guys have a direction you're supposed to go in. I've got Egypt handled. Start walking. I've cleared the way. Walk down it. He tells Moses, lift up your staff, stretch it over to the sea. It's going to pull apart. The pillar of cloud moves behind them, blocks off the Egyptians. Verse 20 indicates that Israel's got light to see the whole way they're going, while the Egyptians are stuck in darkness. Finally, Egypt follows in after them, but God clogs their wheels. He throws them into a panic. Moses stretches his hand out over the sea, and the sea returns to normal. And all of Pharaoh's army in the sea are destroyed. And thus the Lord saved Israel that day, it says in verse 30, from the hand of the Egyptians. And Israel saw the Egyptians dead on the seashore. God's enemies were destroyed. And the Exodus is not merely this divine deliverance from slavery, but it's an event that forms Israel. It gives them a new start. Finally today, they believe. They got their faith back. They understand who he is. It's this new beginning. No more Egypt, no more slavery, no more of any of this. God fulfills the promise he made to them in the first place. And so we see in chapter 15, really one of the most beautiful little moments in the Bible. I love chapter 15 here, verses 1 through 21. It's one of the times when Israel gets it right. All these wonderful things happen. God has given them this ultimate deliverance. You know, our number one image of the power of God so often is this parting of the Red Sea. It's this amazing moment. And they recognize it just like we recognize it. It says, starting in verse 1 of chapter 15, Moses said, and Moses and the people of Israel sang this song to the Lord, saying, I will sing to the Lord, for he has triumphed gloriously. The horse and his rider he's thrown into the sea. The Lord is my strength and my song. He has become my salvation. This is my God, and I will praise him, my father's God, and I will exalt him. The Lord is a man of war. The Lord is his name. Pharaoh's chariots and his host he cast into the sea, and his chosen officers were sunk in the Red Sea. The floods covered them and went down into the depths like a stone. Your right hand, O Lord, glorious in power, your right hand shatters the enemy. In the greatness of your majesty, you overthrow your adversaries. You send out your fury, and it consumes them like stubble. At the blast of your nostrils, the waters piled up. The floods stood up in a heap, and the deeps congealed in the heart of the sea. The enemy said, I'll pursue, I'll overtake, I'll divide the spoil. My desire shall have its fill with them. I'll draw my sword, and my hand shall destroy them. And you blew with your wind, and the sea covered them. They sank like lead in mighty waters. Who is like you, O Lord, among the gods? Who is like you, majestic in holiness, awesome in glorious deeds, doing wonders? You stretched out your right hand. The earth swallowed them. You've led your steadfast love, or you've led in your steadfast love the people whom you've redeemed. You've guided them by your strength to your holy abode. The peoples have heard, they tremble. Pangs have seized the inhabitants of the Philistia. Now are the chiefs of Edom dismayed. Trembling seizes the leaders of Moab. All the inhabitants of Canaan have melted away. Israelites say, God, after what you've done, everybody in Canaan is going to know. No one's going to be able to stand before you because they, just like we, have finally learned who you are. Terror and dread fall upon them because of the greatness of your arm. They are still as a stone to To your people, O Lord, pass by till the people pass by whom you have purchased. You will bring them in and plant them on your own mountain, the place, O Lord, which you have made for your own home, the sanctuary, O Lord, which your hands have established. The Lord will reign forever and ever. And when the horses of Pharaoh and his chariots and his horsemen went into the sea, the Lord brought back the waters of the sea upon them. The people of Israel walked on dry ground in the midst of the sea. And Miriam, the prophetess, the sister of Aaron, took a tambourine in her hand, and all the women went out with her. And they were dancing, and Miriam sang to them, "Sing to the Lord, for he has triumphed gloriously. The horse and his rider he has thrown into the sea." Excuse me. God's salvation leads the people to sing, as this passage famously is known as the Song of Moses. Moses and the people break into song to the Lord, and notice that the song's got nothing to do with them. It's got nothing to do with what they've done. They really haven't done much in any of this. But the song is about what God has done. It's this song of victory that God gave them. We've spent each lesson looking through Exodus, considering ways that God shows us, that God was showing us regarding the redemption and salvation that would come through Christ. Now that's what Exodus is really leading us to. It's leading to this promise. And so many of the things here show who God is in such a way that, you know, that helps us to better understand when Jesus comes along. God is a God of deliverance, a God who keeps his promises. And these same ideas are used through the rest of the Bible. And the first picture given to us is clear. God's people have to trust God's wisdom, trust God's promises, trust God's direction, even when circumstances look terrible. God deserves our trust because he has shown wisdom in every story, in every event, in everything that he's done. He's kept his promises. He's provided direction and protection. And I think we look at a story like the Israelites here, and we got to tell ourselves, I can't panic and give up when difficulties come. I got to be able to trust God because he's there with me. Second of all, this scene, I think, is like a picture of our salvation in Jesus. I like how 1 Corinthians chapter 10 puts it in verses 1 through 5. Paul says, "I don't want you to be unaware, brothers, that our fathers were all under the cloud, and they all passed through the sea. They were all baptized into Moses in the cloud and in the sea, and all ate the same spiritual food. They all drank the same spiritual drink, for they drank from the spiritual rock that followed them. The rock was Christ. Nevertheless, with most of them, God was not pleased, for they were overthrown in the wilderness." What we see in Israel's salvation kind of parallels our own. As the Israelites were pursued by Egypt into the place of death, yet Israel emerged alive while the Egyptians perished, so we've gone down into death with Christ. We've been baptized into his death, and by God's power, emerged alive while death itself is defeated. We noted that the Exodus was not merely deliverance from slavery, but it was this event that forms a new people. They got a new beginning. And this is what Jesus does for us. Jesus not only sets us free from sins, but as a new Moses promised by God, this baptism into his death gives us a new beginning as God's people. It's a whole new life. When the waters came down, it's this final picture of freedom for them. The enemy has been destroyed. And baptism works that same way for us. When that water comes over us, the enemy of sin is destroyed. Paul puts it this way in Romans 6, verse 4, "We were buried, therefore, with him by baptism into death, so in order that, just as Christ was raised from the dead by the glory of the Father, that we too might walk in newness of life." And I like how when the people celebrate in chapter 15, they talk about who did this. It wasn't them. God did this. For us, God did this through Christ. We sit back and we watch the victory of God accomplished over Satan and over sin through the death and resurrection of Jesus, just like the Israelites watched him defeat the Egyptians. God has won. We don't have to do anything to make that victory any greater. We just see the victory that he accomplished. We just need to see it and enjoy the spoils of that war that's been given to us by God. All of this is what the prophets predicted, particularly Isaiah. We have time to just look at one of those passages tonight. There's a lot of stuff in Isaiah kind of regarding the way that what Jesus does is this victory over sin. But Isaiah 51, verses 9 through 11, it says, "Awake, awake, put on strength, O arm of the Lord. Awake, as in the days of old, the generations of long ago. Was it not you who cut Rahab to pieces, who pierced the dragon? Was it not you who dried up the sea, the waters of the great deep, who made the depths of the sea a way for the redeemed to pass over? And the ransomed of the Lord shall return and come to Zion with singing. Everlasting joy will be upon their heads. They shall obtain gladness and joy, and sorrow and sighing shall flee away." Prophets take this image of crossing through the Red Sea, and that they combine this with what we see in Jesus. This is how they picture this salvation we find in Christ. Through water, God is delivering his people just like he did then. The ransom will return to Zion singing. And what are they singing? They're singing the song of Moses, just like the people in Exodus were singing. The author of Revelation picks up on all the same imagery in Revelation chapter 15, verses 2 through 4. He's having this vision of the end, of the saints coming home, and he says, "And I saw what appeared to be a sea of glass mingled with fire, and those who had conquered the beast and its image and the number of its name, standing beside the sea of glass with harps of God in their hands, they sing the song of Moses, the servant of God, the song of the Lamb, saying, 'Great and amazing are your deeds, O Lord God Almighty. Just and true are your ways, O King of the nations. Who will not fear, O Lord, and glorify your name? For you alone are holy. All nations will come to worship you, for your righteous acts have been revealed." Revelation has this same message, really, essentially, as Exodus 15. God's won the battle. If God's on your side, there is no failure. God's won the battle, and we sing that song of Moses today. That song of victory, praising God for what he's done, not what we've done. Notice that this song of Moses in Exodus and the song of Moses mentioned in Revelation, they're praising God. It's not a discussion of our personal enjoyment of God, but they're acknowledging who God is and what he has done. It's focused on him. We sing because of what God's done for us. We sing because God's overthrown our enemies. And both records of these songs contain a focus on what God is doing in the world. God's lasting rule, a recognition of peoples and nations that God has to be feared. Through Christ, as a new Moses, we as the church, a new Israel, gain entrance into heaven, a new promised land. In fact, Hebrews 4, verses 1 through 13, teach us that Christ has come to complete what Moses could not. Moses nor Joshua could get people to that promised rest. Rather, God spoke of another day. In Hebrews 4, verses 8 through 11, it says, "For if Joshua had given them rest, God would not have spoken of another day later on. So then there remains a Sabbath rest for the people of God. Whoever has entered God's rest has also rested from his works, as God did from his. Let us therefore strive to enter that rest, so that no one may fall by the same sort of disobedience that the Israelites struggled with." I love this story of deliverance. You know, the people are afraid. They don't think there's any way this is going to succeed. They think that all is lost. And God saves them. And the Bible really is trying to show us throughout its whole story that God never changes from that God that delivered the people at the Red Sea. Even today, we still fight with sin. It's an enemy that pursues us relentlessly. But through Christ, there's an option for deliverance. We've come through that sea of baptism in our own exodus from sin so that we can sing and glorify God, who through Jesus has won that battle against sin and death and Satan. So I want to encourage you, as you go through your week this week, strive to enter that rest. Remain steadfast to the Lord. Trust in God's wisdom. Trust in his promises. Trust in his direction and protection. You know, I think it's really easy sometimes in life to get sidetracked, to have a problem and just give up hope. But I think the solution for us today, same solution for the Israelites when they were wandering in the wilderness. Don't give up on God. Don't doubt him just because you can't see the way. Trust him. And stay close to him in every difficulty. I don't know what difficulty you're going through this evening, what struggle you might have, what needs you might have, but if there's anything we can do for you tonight, please come as we stand and as we sing.